Hey man, I don't care who you are. That just doesn't get old. That gets me fired up every single time I watch it. I don't care how many times I see it. So you and I had the opportunity to be in the same room, which is amazing, this last weekend, speaking at a conference. It was great. We had some great audience engagement. And you rolled out with a new concept that we hadn't even talked about. We haven't even been addressed. Like as you marched out there, you just started doing it. And it was awesome. We were talking about different types of disruption. So walk me through that, because our audience wants to hear about that too.
Thanks, Jake. Yeah, I agree. It was a new old topic. When we talk about total disruption, we talk about there are two forms, right? Internal and external disruption. And I really led with the internal disruption. I actually led with the external disruption, but the internal is the most important. And I'm going to go to Carlos Castaneda, this author guy who is really cool. He has a quote that says, "We either make ourselves miserable or we make ourselves strong, and the amount of work is the same." And the key word Castaneda hit on is work. And internal disruption means what thoughts do you have in your head? What's the noise going on in here? What stimuli are you being driven by? And who's guiding your subconscious, if it's not you, to make the decisions you're making every day, whether it's buying decision, a business decision, a food decision, when to leave the house. In other words, there's a mechanism in all of us and our subconscious that's rolling around, and we're driven on stimulus, right? And to disrupt as a marketer, or to disrupt as a service provider, or to disrupt as a person who's trying to do business and help others with goods and services, how do we get into someone's head? And that's not even talking about external disruption. What do you have to add to that, Jake?
Yeah, and you're totally right, man. You're absolutely right. And I love where you talk about who's operating your thoughts, right? Who's actually in charge of that particular piece? You know, we've talked about this before, and it's a different space of, so what's your diet, right? What's your diet look like relative to media consumption, relative to book consumption, relative to the people you're spending time around? Because sometimes their thoughts start to bleed into yours. And a lot of times we see that like limiting belief of, well, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's their limiting belief, but our thoughts eavesdrop on that a little bit. So when you touch on that, who's in charge of making those decisions, it's totally true. I mean, and this is, I was recently reading some Napoleon Hill stuff, some different later released magazine articles, not the standard Think and Grow Rich, that talk about this, like you said, it's the new old, it's the old new, it's the same thing. We've been talking the same thing from a psychological standpoint. So, I mean, from my perspective, in that moment, it's what's your diet look like? What are you taking in that's creating that thought process, good, bad, or indifferent? So, I mean, from that, you know, and you talk about internal disruption versus external. So that's an external onus that's disrupting my internal thought process. So it's an external onus. So how do I, in your experience in the past, how have you gotten control of that? We've heard it called like the drunk monkey. We've heard it called a million different things, limiting belief, good and evil on your shoulders. What are you doing to get control of that and keep control of it?
I have a habit of about three times a day. I ask myself, what am I doing? I may use a different word than what am I doing? I might add a few words. I might take a few away. But three times a day, I'm looking at my calendar. I'm looking at some of my lists. I'm looking at my to-dos, and I'm going, okay, wait a minute. Why am I down this path, and what am I doing here? I stop. Before I start, I stop. Before I even start my day, I stop my brain. When I'm in the middle of my day, I stop my brain. And at the end of my day, I stop my brain. And what that means is I want to make sure that I'm still on some sort of course that's productive, that's mentally healthy, and that's giving me the results I'm trying to get. Because it's easy to get distracted, or it's easy to go down a rabbit hole that I don't even know I'm going down. Mm-hmm. And it's easy just to say, well, I'm working, but the whole day new things are popping up constantly, and new sets of emergencies and fires are coming up constantly. to where if I don't do that at least three times a day, there are days, Jake, I'll be honest with you, man, where I just don't have it. And I have to do that about six or seven times a day. It's almost like I put the car in park, look around, and I take a minute, and then I kind of put it in drive again and make sure that I'm doing the correct things. Because when we're as busy as we all are, again, with you have a family with kid responsibilities, pet responsibilities, health issues, there are things that creep into the brain constantly all day long that can easily, and I use this analogy, right? There's like, this is me and what I'm trying to do. And this is everything else is creating this wave that comes over top and crashes down on what I'm trying to do. So by taking those pauses, I stop the water from rising for a second in here, and then I begin to allow a decision-making process in the rest of my day. So if you're going to arrest that thought process, beginning, middle, end, then that's a pretty good idea. And obviously the end can turn into some sort of plan for tomorrow jargon, but we don't want to even get into that. This is more about disrupt that momentum.
So this had to be something like there's nobody in our audience, like, and everybody's wondering, and I've had the same thought process. How did you create this habit? Like, because this is a habit. This has to be something this is critical thinking. This is intentional thinking, and this is pattern disruptive, right? This is I need to disrupt my pattern that I'm in right now to make sure I'm in the right space. What was the first things you did to start down that road, man?
So I'm a guy who suffers from extreme ADHD, and that's clinical diagnosis. And I was a person with a ton of energy. And when I was in the service business world, what I would do was I would run around at a constant adrenaline rush with a bunch of caffeine, and I would be running from appointment to appointment to appointment to appointment to appointment. And then at night, I was making sure that I was always gas on, pedal down, 100 miles an hour. I thought the more that I could do in a chaotically heavy state, almost like an emergency responder in the middle of chaos, I would always create these states every single day until a good 12 years went by. And then finally, I kind of hit this adrenal wall where I realized the absence of stuff is just as good as the compiling of it. So being a person that was super scatterbrained, doing literally driving, making phone calls, someone that was literally occupying every free space, vacuuming out any air in the day, to having a crash and burn moment. I'm not talking about crash and burn financially. I'm just talking about crash and burning up here, where all of a sudden the behavior pattern got a little crazy. I said, wait. And then I started studying some ideas about pausing. I started looking into folks in the yoga and the meditation world. I started taking those ideas and said, wait a minute. You know, I don't know that I can take any amount of time of great length throughout the day. But for me, intentionally, if I don't stop what I'm doing, I'm going from making emails and phone calls to building a set of steps. And I don't even know how I got there. I'm just addicted to the energy and addicted to the movement of the day. So these four stops on my end came out of necessity and a blend of the business world and the holistic world. How does that land when I start talking about that? Is that a little too woo, Jake, or is that make, I'm trying to get as street level as possible here and not go into the ethereal, you know, let's meditate for 45
minutes.
No,
and there's, and this can simply be stated, right? And the power of the pause. You specifically said it, the power of the pause. We know this as public speakers, the power of the pause. That felt like an eternity to most people, right? But there's power in that pause. It's the space to go ahead and allow more thought, more critical thinking to happen. Music is the same way. The power of the pause. You play the pauses. They're important. The composers put rests in the space on purpose so that you're not just constant, you know, grinding through that. It's such a powerful piece to talk about. We're going to talk about more about this. So if you guys want to keep having this conversation with us, we would love for you guys to connect with us. totaldisruption.com, total-disruption.com, so you don't get that all confused. Come and be part of the conversation. Join the community. When you subscribe to the show, a donation every single month for your subscription goes to Boys and Girls Clubs of America. We're super stoked to be part of that. And we just want to make sure you guys had that opportunity as we keep this conversation going. So Michael, with the back to the pauses, right? Back to that critical moment of taking, like, walk me back to like the first time that you truly realized the power of that pause in that moment of critical thinking to go, yeah, I'm on the right path, or holy crap, I got to back up and go a different way.
I was trying to force myself into a next income stratosphere, and I was getting ready to invest in a piece of real estate, and I was doing an owner buyback situation from the current owner of the piece of real estate. And this was at the time was in Virginia, and it was a moderately priced home. And I was, again, pushing myself to try to get into the real estate business and become a house flipper or become a landlord. And I went literally to a settlement. I drove an hour and a half to a settlement, which was done remotely. And I'm sitting down, and there was three pieces of documentation that should have been present that were not there. And I almost went ahead with signing the piece of paper. And I called my friend who was supposed to have the documents ready. And something just went off in my head, and I was literally ready to sign. And I didn't. And it saved me. It saved me a lot of headache. Well, that was my first signal. The second time that I did this, I didn't listen to my gut, and I signed the documents. And what had happened was I had ended up in a negative real estate transaction, negative on me. And that was a lot of headache. It was a very expensive mistake. It was a ton of emotional pain. I was on the hook for a lot, and I made a huge mistake. And I didn't listen to my gut, and I didn't listen to my previous lesson. So from that point forward, that was a super costly mistake. That point forward, I was aware of self-pressure. I was aware of the looping conversation in my head. I was aware of the, maybe it's not your gut, but an instant maturity came up. If you're involving yourself in a packet of information this thick and you're missing three key documents, don't just sign and adjust later. Stop. Pause. So it was a very painful lesson. I took it from there, and then I said, okay, I'm going to do this now more often. And then I started looking at how I was spending my day, how I was managing my time, the things that were driving me in the energy and the direction I was going. Another micro example of this would be I would service a certain area, and then I started getting clients a little bit outside of that service area. So I was driving a little extra, trying to, again, look at just the bottom line. More money in means better for me. Not even looking at the expense portion of the wear and tear on the vehicle, the gas, the extra time, the way back. I didn't have any way to liquidate or monetize the way back from the customers I was driving to. Again, pedal down, accelerator on, go, go, go. Not a mature pause. So one's a major example. The other one's a minor example. And the key savings in all this is stress here in the heart, stress here in the head, and then coming from a platform of mature decision-making to where, you know, if the fish are over here, I'm casting my rod over there. If the fish are not over here, I'm not getting a bigger piece of bait to try to draw them in where they're not. So those two examples on a big scale and a small scale are the way I came up with the pause.
And it's so critically important. It's so unbelievably important. And it's like anything else we talk about. And we know it's amazingly simple to pay attention to those, because it's the simple things that make huge impacts in our lives and in our businesses. We know that's true. Yours, it was, you know, emotional, it was financial, different pieces. So you nailed on something that I want to touch on again. the power of the pause. And you said, if you don't feel it in your gut, so there's a difference here, right? And we see a lot of people get stuck in just paralyzed in decision-making, right? We see this. What would you say the difference is between this decisive pause and second guessing yourself? What's the difference between the two, you think?
That's a good question. It's actually okay to second guess yourself and then disagree with yourself, second guessing yourself. Why don't you say that 10 times really fast? They call it devil's advocate. The pause could also be looked at as devil's advocate. You know, there's been several times, I used to do a lot of extreme sports where you're getting ready to take on a moment from a stead stop to enter into a risky situation that is calculated based on skill set and a little bit of luck. But when you second guess yourself, if you take that leap, there can be no second guessing. So to choose to make the next move is you've left second guessing and now you've gone and made an informed decision. So how do you space that out? Second guessing means do I have all the information? Am I comfortable with the risk and the outcome? Am I comfortable with the amount of time, energy, and effort this is going to take? Am I pipe dreaming here, or do I really know this is a real decision with real outcomes that I really want to have happen? And do I have the right people and the right resources in place to execute that action? There is the key. If you're second guessing yourself, all these things are going to take, probably a good 20 minutes out of your mind. And by then, that pause is no longer a pause. That's a full-on distraction.
Yeah, but would I rather take 20 minutes, a half an hour to make an informed decision that's going to save me millions of dollars down the road? Yes, absolutely. I need to be objective with it. The only one that I would challenge you on, and I know we're heading there, the only one that I would challenge you on from my coaching perspective is, and this one gets dangerous, this is that second guess, am I comfortable? So like that one, I heard that one, and I know what you mean when you say comfortable, but I want to lay that into the audience a little bit. Like, you're not going to grow in comfort. Like, there's going to be decisions you're going to make that are uncomfortable. And sometimes, call it faith, call it whatever you want to do, use the informed decision. All the things are still going to point that way, and you're going to be grossly uncomfortable, like looking for a trash can to get sick in, uncomfortable, and yet it's still the right decision. So caution, be careful with your comfort is where I would go with that one.
If I may say, comfortable with the outcome means if I'm thinking about doing it and I know it's a risk and I'm taking a calculated move forward, am I comfortable with the outcome? Am I comfortable knowing that I'm going to achieve that and I'm not going to self-sabotage myself? Mm-hmm. I'll go one layer deeper in psychology. Because you're never going to be comfortable after a pause making a new decision. There's always going to be a moment of regret.
True.
If you stop your momentum, your behavior patterns back in that momentum, and you're new to this kind of thing, and you're trying to redirect, it's an incredible, not everybody can compartmentalize. It's a skill that you have to adhere to, right? You have to develop it. And you have to say, whoa, I just shifted gears and now I'm moving in this direction. You're still going to have some residue. You're definitely going to have some residue. Remember, if you're new to pausing, put it in your life, put it in your systems, teach it to other people. Just get comfortable being uncomfortable and believe in yourself and know that when you come out of the pause making your next decision, it's going to be the right one.
Nothing to add, man. That was awesome. As always, Michael, thank you so much for everything you do. Jake Glendang, we're Total Disruption, and peace out, guys.